Hey everyone, it's Kayla here, and thank you for joining us for this episode of The Ramblings of Two Theater Gays. Today we're going to be talking about the movie Quest for Camelot. It is an animated movie released in 1998 from Warner Brothers Animation Studios and is directed by Frederick Duchaux. It is a star-studded cast featuring the voices of Jesselyn Gilsig, Cary Elwes, Gary Oldman, Eric Idle, Don Rickles, and Pierce Brosnan. It also features the singing voices of Andrea Corr, Brian White, and Celine Dion. We hope you enjoy this episode, and here we go. Hi, Trey.
Hey, Kayla.
How are you doing?
I'm thriving. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. Got a glass of wine next to me, and I am just ready to deep dive into this episode today.
Same here. So for our viewers, as you probably listened to the intro, we're talking about Quest for Camelot. Personally, this is one that this was my first time watching this. And so I'm pretty sure if I were still 5-6 years old watching this, I would have less questions than I do now,
probably.
But I'm really excited to talk about this show and kind of what I envision it as if it were, say, a musical.
Yeah, so I find it interesting. I guess it's not all that interesting that you haven't seen this one, because this is one of Warner Brothers' biggest flops.
This is probably why I did not see it.
Yeah, because I remember this is one of the few, like, animated movies I did not see in theaters. Like, I'm pretty sure it was in the bargain bin at, like, a Walmart or something. And that's the only reason why I own this movie today. But
you sure you didn't find it at a Blockbuster's? I feel like this would have definitely been in the, like, the sale aisle at a Blockbuster's.
I mean, yeah, probably, now that I'm really thinking about it, probably that's more accurate to everything. Oh my God, we're so old talking about Blockbuster.
Look, my aunt, when I was a child, used to work at a Blockbuster, and we would go in just to grab one of the balloons because they had those helium balloons in a Blockbuster. And so me and my sister, yeah, I think this was before my little brother was born. But me and my sister, we would just go in there sometimes and, you know, we'd steal one of the balloons. We'd suck in the helium and then we'd have the really high squeaky voices.
Oh, hell yeah. So my best memory of Blockbuster is when I was younger, every Friday I would go out and I would have, we would go to a pizza restaurant with my best friend. And then I would go with her and her parents to Blockbuster. And we would always rent a movie and take that movie and we would always, like, watch it. But another big fun thing that just so near and dear to my heart about Blockbuster is that's what I tell people. Like, so I went on one date with a guy, okay? And so every time I tell people, yeah, the last time I went on a date with a guy, it was when Blockbuster was still around, because that's where we went on our date, was to a Blockbuster. So if that says anything about me.
To be fair, if my first date with a guy was at a Blockbuster, it would also be my last date with the guy. I would just become a hermit and do nothing else with my life. But besides how old we are and Blockbuster being a very interesting staple of our lives, Quest for Camelot.
Yeah, Quest for Camelot. So it actually went through a whole bunch of rewrites before they actually settled on, like, Quest for Camelot. So Quest for Camelot was originally supposed to be about the quest for the Holy Grail, but they went through so many changes of directors and everything like that, that that's when they finally decided to have it be about finding Excalibur. And I think, like, now as an adult watching this, I can definitely tell that there were so many rewrites that happened with this, that you can tell that this plot is all over the place and not at all concise.
Yeah, that was, I think, one of my biggest things about this. It was also why, as I was watching it, I was like, this is definitely a TYA show, theater for young audiences, for those who don't know what TYA means. Instead of like some big grand Broadway show, it would definitely just go into the kind of children's theater market, just because of everything that's in it. Although and mostly because of the whole storytelling moment in the very beginning, where the main girl's father was telling the story of how Camelot became a thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck yeah, we can definitely keep that storytelling moment in. That was probably one of the most interesting things about the whole show, because I saw that and I was like, oh, cool, this is going to be a really interesting thing. And then it kind of just really took a weird turn.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, because I think that was one of my favorite things about this. Like, because also when I was watching this again, I thought it was going to focus really heavily on, like, you know, the Celtic history of everything, just because of, like, all...
You would think that because of the music.
Yes! And they just don't at all. And it really kind of, like, you know, got me disappointed. Because I was like, oh, like, these all look so Celtic with the music and all of the different symbols that you're seeing on, like, people's swords and with Excalibur. And all of a sudden, it just does not have that at all.
And it's based on a novel called The King's Damosel, which I guess is supposed to be, like, damsel in some other kind of language. And it was just, I kind of now just want to read that book to see what was right and what was not.
Yeah.
Just because it's supposed to be based off of that. And I'm just like, if the book is as interesting as this movie looks, then maybe that's why I never heard of the book.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of really makes you think, how much creative liberty did they take from the book to make this movie? So
speaking of liberty, when the Knights of the Round Table were there and they were holding up their shields and reflecting the light of the sun or whatever fucking light beams were coming in, the fact that they had liberty and justice in there, I was like, that's so fucking American.
It's so like cheesy.
The propaganda of the 90s was real.
Yeah, because now that you mentioned the fact that this feels like it's a very TYA show, the themes and the plot are so, so simplistic that I'm watching this and I'm just like, wow, this is like really dumbed down. But the thing is, I watch this, I can see so much potential for it being bigger and grander and for like an older audience. Not that, like, you know, TYA shows are dumb. I mean, there's a whole lot of importance that goes into a TYA show, but I personally don't really like performing in TYA shows because of how simplistic it is. I need some complex shit when it comes to my shows and history and everything like that. And this just does not.
Well, see,
that's
the thing about this one. I think, yeah, because this is is kind of simplistic in both the story and the romance that's involved in it. And I think children would absolutely love it. Like, I honestly, as a child, I probably would have thought it was great. Like, I think the most interesting character is the villain, because first of all, why would he looks so different from the other generic white boy men of the Knights. And he obviously looks like he's a Viking, like some fucking Attila the Hun type of shit going on. And so why would King Arthur even put him in the Knights? And who even wants a greedy knight at their round table? And what is his name? Rhubarb. Because every time they pronounced his name in this fucking movie, it was like they were swallowing their words to the point where I could not understand it.
Rhubarb. R-U-B-E-R.
Great. Rhubarb. Because I was like, Robert? What are you trying to name this man?
Rothbart.
But yeah. Rothbart also. Oh my god, there were so many moments in this movie that reminded me so much of some of the Disney shows that I grew up knowing. Like, when, and you'll have to remind me of the protagonist's name again, because I cannot remember her name.
Kaylee.
For the life of me. Haley?
Kaylee.
Kaylee? Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Kaylee and Kayla. Perfect. Beautiful.
Right?
But there's a moment where after Rhubarb? I'm just going to call him Rhubarb and we'll see what happens.
Call him Rhubarb if you want to.
Great. Where Rhubarb comes to their house, he sets everything on fire and she runs away. That the point where she's in the Forbidden Forest, and they're in that water and those machines that he's created are attacking her, very Hercules.
Oh yes. For
like
sure.
The moment where Hercules first meets Megara is very Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there is no way Disney did not watch this and say that is a great moment and no one will ever notice it.
Well, honestly, so I think Hercules came out in 1997. This movie was slated to be released in 1997, but it was delayed and postponed so many times because they had to go through so many changes that that's why this movie was released in 1998. So who knows? Maybe some people that were working on this movie got transferred over to Disney and put that in there. You
half
never
the
know.
People who have worked on these animated things have transferred over to Disney, let's be honest. But a personal, this is my fault here because I started rambling on about things in the movie that no one else has watched yet other than me and Kayla. So we should probably go back.
You mean the ramblings of two theater gays?
Yes, but we should probably go back to the very beginning and talk about this movie.
Yeah, so I think in the very beginning. I think the beginning of this movie is where it's at its strongest. Because you have, you know, the daughter with her father before he has to go off for his knighthood in Camelot and everything like that. And so you have, like, the storytelling to, like, kind of tell the story of Excalibur and how, like, you know, Excalibur is supposed to represent, like, you know, the coming of everybody together and everybody living equally and in peace. And then you have the setup.
Which, sidebar, I am such a big fan of the King Arthur legends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love every version I can find of it. And so I was really excited about this being that. And then it wasn't.
Yeah, they really made it fall flat kind of after the beginning. Because then also, like, the beginning opening song that they have where it's, like, you know, it's, like, Celtic chanting almost with, like, the lutes and the horns and everything like that, I think is just so beautiful, and I love that. But then you just have the actual lyrics of everything, and it's all so cheesy. And you can really tell that it's cheesy and really geared towards children. But then you also just have, like, a really good setup to show, you know, everybody's wanting to work together to, like, you know, divide the lands equally and everybody be equal in, like, you know, the kingdom of Camelot. And then you have Rhubarb being, like, this great big jerkhead. And it's like, I want everything. But, you know, again, then it just goes super simplistic after that. Then you have, you know, Rhubarb killing Lionel, who is Kaylee's dad. Then you have her, like, then you have them 10 years later, and it's, like, you know, the 10 years of, like, you know, the Camelot's unity or whatever.
Can we just pause right here and talk about, like, My Father's Wings for a second? I'm assuming that's the title of the song.
Yes.
Because I didn't look it up because I just assumed by the way they kept repeating My Father's Wings, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was very interesting transition to where, like, she's looking into the water and she goes from, I'm guessing, like, I guess 5 years went by and we see her face then. And we don't really kind of stay there. We just shimmy right to the next 10 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see her grow up through a reflection of water, which interesting in itself, but I kind of wish the song was longer so that we could stay between each transition of her going into her adulthood, I guess, which for Disney probably means she was either 16 or 17 years old. So still a child.
Well, this isn't Disney. This is Warner Brothers. Looked at as an adult.
Right, Warner Brothers. I mean, all the anime people are Disney, let's be honest.
Whereas in my mind, I mean, she was like 10 when her dad like went off to Camelot. So to me, with it being 10 years later, I'm guessing she's 20. But that's just...
she was 8, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? It could just be that too. I don't even know.
Yeah, but also I just... I'm not the biggest fan of any of the songs in this. Like, I thought David Foster would do a lot more.
Yeah, all the songs are really bad. There's only one song that is worth talking about, but we'll get to that song later. So, yeah, with My Father's Wings, I mean, for the purposes of blocking, if we were to do this on stage and the way that, like, you know, she's doing, like, all of her normal, like, farm duties, but she's also kind of, like, you know, longing to be a knight just like her father, all of that, that stuff I think you can keep. But I think definitely all of the songs, I'm just going to say, with the exception of one song, all the songs need to be rewritten for this
book. Oh, absolutely, definitely. All the songs need to be rewritten. Some of them need to be cut. And while we're here talking about the farm, I didn't understand the purpose of the chicken.
I fucking hate the chicken. The chicken...
like, what the fuck was the purpose of the motherfucking chicken?
This chicken is just the equivalency of Jar Jar Binks. That chicken is the Jar Jar Binks of Quest for Camelot. I'm just throwing that shit out there.
I can agree with that on every single level. I just, because for those of you who have never seen this movie, and it's probably almost all of you who have never seen this movie, they kind of segue to this one moment that is just very kind of Looney Tunes in the way that it is played, where we see this chicken and he's flirting with these other chickens, and then apparently has a wife, and so his wife keeps coming out and slaps him on the head because he's basically being a playboy, which this chicken does not look good enough to be a motherfucking playboy. Let's just throw that out there.
You know what it is? It's the trope of a skinny, pathetic little man that thinks he has game with all of the other women, and then he goes off and he marries like this great big sassy woman. That is just like, no, you are my man. Do not go flirting with other women. It's that trope. And I absolutely hate that trope. And it just annoys me to no end.
I hate that trope as well. Everything about the side characters in this show was absolutely worthless.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely worthless. No side character was good.
No.
Well, I will refrain from that. I will say there were some side characters that were okay, and we'll get to those later when we're in the Forbidden Forest.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, now that we agreed that the Jar Jar Binks chicken is definitely going to be cut from the show and serves absolutely no purpose whatsoever, does not progress the
plot. Jar Jar Binks chicken.
It's the Jar Jar Binks chicken, and it's so annoying. And then you have, the next song that happens is, I think, the worst villain song in the history of villain songs. It's Ruber's song when he talks about, like, his plot of how he's going to, like, invade Camelot and steal Excalibur and take over the kingdom. I think it's the worst song. It's not even really a song.
I had so many high hopes for that song. Like, I'm not even gonna... I just had so many high hopes for that song because the underscoring for it was so good for a villain. Like, there were these, like, alternative rock kind of feelings to it, and I was ready for him to go into some, I don't know, squelting or something, whatever he could do in that song, and then he just talked it.
Yeah. And it just...
he just talked, sung the whole thing, and I was like, oh god, the lyrics are so bad for such a really good written underscore by Patrick Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I just find it so interesting. Like, I have never known Gary Oldman to be a singer. That's the actor that plays Ruber. I mean, Gary Oldman can play a really good villain. Like, he just can. He's a very good, versatile actor. But
yeah, and the villain's speech and cadence that he had was great.
Yeah, it's
for most of the show.
For most,
but God, I love a good villain song. Like, if you can't get me with the villain song, then there's no hope for your show for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Swan Princess kind of went downhill for me. And
literally the entire time that I was watching Rhubarb's, oh my God, now you have me calling him Rhubarb. Ruber's villain song. Literally the entire time I was watching this, I was just like, oh man, Trey's gonna fucking hate this and is just gonna tear this song to shreds, and I hope to God he does.
It was so bad. Like, I think I literally wrote down somewhere, I literally said, this is probably worse than the Swan Princess song, evil song.
I think it's definitely worse than the, like, Swan Princess song.
I honestly didn't think that would happen for me, that I would find something worse than I thought the Swan Princess Evil song was. But it was there, and I was, and like, I, like, well, at, okay, here's the thing. At first, when I was just listening to it, when the first couple of bars came out, I was like, ooh, much better villain song than the Swan Princess. And then I went, scratch that. This is shit. Who wrote this?
Yeah, it's god awful. I mean, I think it's a really cool... So, aside from the song being terrible, showing how evil Ruber can be and how he has, like, this potion from some witches and that he just transforms all of his henchmen into these, like, mechanized monsters that some of them have morning stars for arms and, like, you know, claws and swords for arms is, I think, very cool and interesting.
I just want to say one thing about the potion while we're here. The fact, because it's very Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
because
it's called Acme.
That the potion was an Acme potion.
Yeah.
And I was like, y'all really had to get Acme out there, didn't you, in any way possible?
Because it's Warner Brothers. Of course they have to.
I know, but I was just like, God, y'all are the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really bad.
But also this song, like, the green light and the smoke and everything, very much a Lion King, Be Prepared vibes.
Oh, yes. For sure.
Because I feel like they got the same animator or drawer or artist or whatever for this, because it was very much similar in how the smoke waved and the green color of the light. And it was like I was waiting for Scar to pop out and just start singing.
Like,
which would have made it like 10 times better.
Right. So I definitely think, just a short segue, I think this is why a lot of villains I associate with the color green, because of movies like The Lion King and, you know, Maleficent and Quest for Camelot, green is a very central color when it comes to lighting. But okay, anyway, so moving on. So after you have that, now you have like this character of the griffin. You get introduced to the griffin that is supposed to steal.
I fucking hate the griffin.
He's the only...
Like, I would like the griffin more if...
If his voice
like the
wasn't
griffin
so
more
stupid?
If he didn't talk.
If he didn't talk.
Yeah. If he didn't talk.
Just to give everybody...
I also wrote, who got Griffin money? Who the fuck got Griffin money?
So, for anybody that just really wants to know what this Griffin sounds like, he sounds just like this. Precisely. It's literally because of that fucking Griffin. I don't say precisely like a normal person. I always say precisely because of that fucking Griffin. But yeah, that's how he talks like the whole movie. And he barely has any lines. I think it would be even creepier if the griffin didn't talk. Like, what if Ruber and the griffin, they communicated with their eyes, you know? Because that griffin has some really creepy eyes. So,
like, the griffin is terrifying until he speaks, mm-hmm. and I'm mad about it.
Yeah, literally, he just needs to not talk, and I think, like, if the griffin is able to, like, I don't even know if this is, like, the true mythology of griffins. I don't know if they have, like, some sort of, like, magical quality with their eyes that they can hypnotize people, but if that was an actual thing, I think that would be even cooler to throw in.
I don't think that's canon, but with everything else they kind of threw into this show, they could have made it work.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I feel like for this movie to really be successful, you really have to do a lot of history into Arthurian legend. And then also, if you really wanted to incorporate the Celticness of it, you really have to brush up on your Celtic history and all of, like, the mythological creatures and everything like that. But the next song that I want to talk about, this is the one that I feel like is the best song in the entire movie, and it's the prayer song that Celine Dion sings.
Which got me, because I was like, wait, is the prayer from this movie? And is that Celine Dion singing it?
Because mm-hmm.
I was shook. I was fucking shook. Yep. In that moment, because I was like, this, I was not expecting this.
It's so good. Like, so I didn't even realize
it's a beautiful song.
Yeah, I didn't even realize that this song was sung outside of this movie until...
Really?
No, I didn't realize that it was sung that much outside of this movie until all of a sudden I listened to it on The Masked Singer last season when the Snow Owls sang it. And it was so... beautiful. And I totally forgot that, yeah, this song is a standalone song, because I'm pretty sure Celine Dion put it on one of her albums, and then Andrea Bocelli put the song on one of his albums as well. So I forgot that it could also just be a standalone song and not just from this movie.
Although I will say I love when the song gets a duet where one person sings it in English and another person sings it in Italian. Beautiful. I will say to our audience, at some point, I feel like Kayla and I are just going to have a conversation about The Masked Singer, just because I think it just needs to be talked about and our responses to it. But I did like the prayer. I thought it was probably the only good song, as you said, in the whole movie. I wouldn't put it where they put it in the movie.
Really?
I think instead of, like, at the very... Yeah, because it felt weird where it was to me. I feel like it's one of those where it should have been, like, I don't know, instead of, like, being on a carriage, because everything happened within a night and a morning
mm-hmm.
of each other.
Right.
Of each other. And I think we could kind of stretch it out to make it feel more like a couple of days, so that this way the mother's hauled up, not in a carriage, but in a house somewhere as a prisoner. And as she's thinking about her daughter on this adventure, off away on this adventure for the very first time, she goes into the prayer.
So literally kind of like a mother's prayer that she says every night before she goes to bed.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see it. Because for me, I thought it fit in very well. Because she's wishing her daughter well when she's, because she has, the daughter's little, Kaylee's literally going off on her own to get to Camelot and to warn King Arthur that, you know, Rhubarb is coming and you have to prepare for an attack. So that's where I felt like it would fit really well. But I also do see your point of it literally being, you know, a prayer before she, you know, goes to bed as a prisoner. So I think, yeah, that'd be really, really yeah. good.
Because I think I flash back to, like, Hunchback of Notre Dame and where that one song.
Oh, God Help the Outcast.
Yeah, God Help the Outcast. It kind of feels like that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of where they place it in the movie, in this movie, I was just like, it felt awkward to me as a musician. Former musician, singer, person, back in the old days of yore, but...
Those days never left you. They're still
no,
there.
No, they left me.
They're still there.
Yeah, they're in the shower. Yeah, they're in the shower.
Yeah,
that's,
see?
That's where
see?
They stay now.
There you go. They're just in the shower with you.
But moving on from that, when, like, what, the fact that, as, because now we're going back to that goddamn chicken. So the chicken was also thrown into the pit where this potion was created, and he was made into this axe. So now his whole face and beak situation is an axe kind of thing.
His name is literally, his name is literally Bladebeak.
Yeah, and somehow this fucking chicken has learned how to talk by being thrown into this potion. And I could have very much gone without him talking.
And is voiced by Jaleel White. For those of you who don't know who Jaleel White is, that's Steve Urkel from Family Matters.
That disappoints me even more for that poor man. But I just...
You can definitely tell, like, they were trying to use him as comic relief, and it just was a huge failure on their part.
It was such a bad time for me, because I kept equating him to the chicken. Well, not the chicken, the rooster from Moana. And I was like, I hated that bird, but he was funny because he was stupid as fuck. This one I just hate. This bird I just hate. With an unholy passion. Why is he here?
Oh, no.
And then not even to get into the fact that at one point he's with the evil people, but then he betrays evil people to set both her and her mother free when they're both captured. What? Anyway.
Yeah, his motives are very questionable. Like, you never know where he falls morally at all.
I feel like it was just a late 2 to 3 a.m. night of drinking coffee, and they're like, what if we do this? And someone said yes, and no one went back and looked at it until it was fully developed.
Yep. But now let's move on to where we finally get to meet Kaylee's love interest, a blind hermit named Garrett.
My only response to him was, the blind warrior is no Toph.
Yeah, Toph is way better. I do agree.
Toph is way fucking better. Also, oh, well, there were two things. It was the blind warrior's no Toph, and good old misogyny from the men. I hate his song because he's an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the one thing about most of, like, 70s, 80s, 90s cartoons, because they would give you this heroine who would try to stick out on their own, but then they found this asshole of a man and somehow fall in love with them. And I'm just like, this is the reason... This is one of the main reasons why so many young girls, especially like millennials, have, like, where they say, like, ooh, I like bad boys. And I'm just like, no, you don't. You were just, it was ingrained into you that the mean guy is going to be the one that loves you forever or some bullshit. And I was just like, this is, oh, I hate it.
Yeah.
I hate the trope so much.
But it also sucks because I see a tiny bit of myself in Garrett, because I am very much someone that I like to do things on my own and not have any help from anybody. So I saw a little bit
of myself. I'm completely fine with.
Say what?
Those are things I do too. Yeah. But I said that I'm completely fine with that. But it's the whole asshole-ish way he went about it.
Yeah. Until he realizes that... until he realizes that Kaylee is the daughter of Sir Lionel, and Sir Lionel is who, like, believed in him that he could be a knight, like a blind knight.
Mm-hmm. And so the whole song, I Stand Alone, which is his, which is basically what he's like, I stand alone, I fight by myself, and blah, 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 even though he basically has a silver-winged bird from Merlin who helps him. Falcon. But it's like, what is the purpose of that song? The song is so dumb. I would cut it immediately.
Yeah.
It's a bad
song. It even had a reprise.
It did. And it was still bad.
Yeah. It would have been better if the reprise made him realize that he doesn't need to be alone. Because I feel like you can kind of keep the song. You would just have to rewrite it a little bit.
I would rewrite it. I would change the name of the song. I would, like, the whole thing would just be revamped into I'm an asshole and this is me. Also, I would make sure heavily that she did not fall in love with this man, because no, how can you just literally fall in love with a man after only knowing him for, I'm going to approximately say, maybe 10 hours?
But that's every single animated movie that we watched as children. They know each other for like 10 hours and then they fall in love with each other. That is something that the Russell siblings have talked about for years. For years, every single time me and my siblings, we sit down, we watch these movies, we're just like, you just met. You cannot fall in love with each other. You just fucking met.
I have so many friends, and those who listen to this are going to like kill me. But when people who are like in a relationship for 3 months and they're just like, I love this person. And I'm like, no, y'all are the fucking equivalent of an animated movie where y'all just met. Where is love coming from? Sit down.
That's puppy love, honey. You're in the honeymoon stage.
I wouldn't even call it puppy love. I would just call it fatuation. But anyway, back onto this thing. So they're in the Forbidden Forest. She follows the blind warrior, because I never cared to remember his name.
Garrett.
Whatever. Into the rest of the forest. And he agrees to let her come along. And they end up in this area where dragon territory.
Dragon country.
And before we get on to the, dragon country territory. And so before we get into a little further into this, I just want to point out that she stepped on a dragon's egg. She basically killed the baby dragon that was inside the dragon's egg. And we completely went past it with no remorse felt whatsoever.
I mean, it was...
What the actual
It was
fuck.
A very flimsy eggshell for that dragon egg. So I don't know.
No. There was definitely something inside it, because you saw the green liquid.
No. I'm not saying that there wasn't anything inside of it. I'm just trying to think of a way to phrase it. Maybe the egg wasn't viable. Like, you know how, like, you're able to, like, get, like, this is why, you know, whenever you buy eggs from the supermarket and everything like that, you don't, like, crack it open and all of a sudden, like, you know, a baby chick, like, falls out of it. Maybe it was in that stage?
I mean, I feel like yes, but I also feel like the dragons would have been getting it ready to go into the baby stage. And that bitch just, I mean, that person just stepped all in it. And they don't even process it.
No.
They just move right past it. I was like, what was the point in even doing it if no one was going to comment on it?
Don't know. A lot of questionable things about this movie. That's one of them.
There were so many questionable things. Although, I think I will give this movie props on one thing and one thing only. The jokes were so bad, they were funny.
Are you talking about the jokes between the two-headed dragons?
Yes, but also, because, like, everything they said was very 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the fact that when we first meet them and their comment is, we're the reason cousins shouldn't marry.
It's because they had Eric Idle from Monty Python. Of course he's going to say jokes like that.
And honestly, I was here for it. Just because of the fact that I was like, this is accurate, but also really funny. But they also kind of reminded me of, because I think this was out around the time that I was this, because this movie came out when I was at least 7 or 8.
Well, if it helps you, this movie came out when I was six.
Yeah, it reminded me of the characters from Dragon Tales. Those siblings, those twin siblings, I cannot remember their name, but they were green and purple.
Yes. I know exactly who you're talking about now. I don't know their names, but I can hear their voices in my head.
Right? And so they reminded me of them.
I'm sorry, continue. I'm being stupid.
No, you're good. You're good. But Cornwall and... Fuck, what was his name?
Devin?
I think his name was Devin.
Mm-hmm.
They were probably, like, they weren't my least favorite characters, but they were probably the best characters that I found.
Yeah. But then you could also just, really tell a lot of their dialogue is so separate from everybody else in the movie. Like, it feels like they literally had Eric Idle and, what's his name? Don Rickles. They literally just had Don Rickles and Eric Idle in the same room together and then just had them riff off of each other. And
which was, like, if the whole movie had been about them trying to find a fucking sword in the Forbidden Forest, I would have been there the whole way through. But, like, their song, If I Didn't Have You, I could take it or leave it. I think the song was too long.
Yes.
For what it was. Because, like, I got it in, like, the first minute. They could live without each other and they would be happy. They didn't have to give me a full 3-minute long montage song about it.
But I think they had to, I think the reason why they had that super long montage of it is because you have comedians like Don Rickles and Eric Idle, and they probably had like a lot of ideas on like how they would be able to like separate in their arguing and everything like that. So that's probably why they kept everything in there. But yeah, they did not need to have all of that. It was definitely way too much. And I feel like it needed to have more lyrics. Because they literally had Cornwall's song and then Devin's. Then they just sang it, their own songs together as a duet, overlapping each other, and no other lyrics.
No other lyrics, if I didn't have you, if I didn't have you. And I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
What is this syncopated beat? What are we doing?
Because then you also have them like, you know, as Sonny and Cher at one point, and then you have them both as Elvis. I mean, that was really, really funny. But yeah, it needed more verses.
So then they finally get out of the Dragontory territory by going through an underground cave. And then we're close to Camelot. We're maybe a good 5 to 6 hours away from Camelot from the way the distance was shown. Because no one's riding a horse. They're all walking barefoot. I would have had blisters and probably would have been sitting down every 20 minutes. But here we are.
And then you always have constantly, you know, Ruber and his gang of thugs, like, always just, like, hot on their trail. Like, the entire time that they're, like, going through the forest.
Oh, yeah, and they never explain fully how they're tracking them. Like, at one point, yeah, sure, you had Blade Beak, or whatever his name was, following them. But then he circled back, and were they following footprints? Were they following the scent? Did the griffin just fly through the forest and was able to see them each time, even though the first time he flew through the forest, there were these weird grabby hands trying to capture him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, apologies to our audience. We completely skipped one very important fact about this whole damn movie. So when we first see the griffin, he has broken into Camelot. He has stolen King Arthur's sword Excalibur. He flew away with it. And then he lost it in this forbidden forest. And this is why we're here.
Oh, yeah. Shit. That's a huge central plot point that we
And we completely forgot about it.
Oops. Sorry. We were just so...
But we circled back.
We were just so focused on how bad the villain song was, we just had to go into it. I think that's probably why.
Yeah, truly. I forgot to write it down, and I was just like, that should have been an important plot point.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, because then, like, the rest of the plot point for the rest of the movie, I don't know. It doesn't have very good... There's no good character development for anybody. There's no good character.
And everything was rushed. Yes. Everything was rushed.
It's so rushed. Because then, later on, they get to where, like, they find the belt and the scabbard for Excalibur. And then Garrett gets injured, and then you have the song, Looking Through Your Eyes.
That love song?
Yeah, the love song.
Yeah, that love song. And it was like, the love song just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Just, like, they were in such a hurry to make these two fall in love. Even though they could have just been best friends, but no, they were just like, yes, let's let them fall in love. Because that makes sense. Because she needs to fall in love with a man to be able to finish her quest or whatever weird ass trope they decided to go with.
Yeah. Because I mean, like, this song, the song's not bad.
Oh no, the song is god awful. I was ready to cut it the minute I heard the first note.
Or were you just ready to cut it because it was Garrett singing it?
Oh no, I was ready to cut it because of the first note of that song, and I was like, this is a terrible song. Because I was mad over the fact that they were falling in love for no reason. Like, she doesn't know anything about him other than her father helped him. And I'm like, are you falling in love with this man because your father helped him and now you believe in him? Even though he was an asshole to you? Because that's weird and wild, and I do not accept. I refute this story, this universe, and I replace it with my own.
Yeah. Yeah, there's really nothing else that I can really say about the song in that scene other than character development, y'all. Just have them go through some character development because no one grows. Everyone stays the same throughout this entire movie. No one goes through any drastic change whatsoever.
Also, what is it with the writers and the animators of 90s animation and Shakespeare? Because they're always throwing in some Shakespearean quote somewhere.
Oh, are you talking about Alas, Poor Yorick, I Knew Him Well?
Yes. Because of their Uncle Yorick.
I thought it was funny.
It was funny. I was just like, but why? Every animation has some kind of Shakespeare quote somewhere in it. Like the American Tail one we just got done watching last week. Was they the evil cat was...
misquoting Shakespeare, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I don't know why they like Shakespeare so much. Maybe it's just because Shakespeare is just like so, it's such a universal thing. Like a lot of times when people say like, oh, you're an actor, the very first thing that I get asked is what's your favorite Shakespeare play? Like legit, someone asked me that question this week while I was at work.
That's gross.
Because I told them that I used to do theater in high school and was like, oh, what's your favorite Shakespeare play? And I'm like, you know, there are other plays other than, you know, Shakespeare.
Well, which poor Shakespeare, you're not in this show anymore. So we move on. And I don't really remember it because I kind of checked out at this point. So Gareth and Kaylee decide to split ways once they get out of the Forbidden Forest.
Well, Garrett decides.
She's on towards Camelot.
Garrett decided to split ways.
Okay. Again, I checked out at this point. So just like I came back in and they were walking in different directions.
Yeah. Garrett decided that if he ever went back to Camelot, his words are, she would only see me through their eyes. And so basically he's kind of like lost all of his confidence and is just like, yeah, if we ever walk into Camelot together, you know, she's going to find someone better than me. So I might as well just go ahead and split ways and not have my heart broken. And that's kind of like his take. So you see,
that's fine. But then he leaves her and then she gets captured. And so then we have the whole going into Camelot battle scene moment. And my biggest question in this is, where the fuck is Merlin?
Just hiding away in a magician? Tower.
Like, he's supposed to be this all-powerful being, and he ain't doing jack shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Merlin, where you at, homeboy? You could have ended this whole battle in 0.5 seconds.
Because then also, if you really think about it, this could have been the perfect opportunity to show that not all magic is bad, because literally the magic that we see is the magic that Ruber has in his potion. We never see Merlin's magic. Like, all that fucking Merlin says is, silver wings, protect the sword. And that's fucking it. And all that Merlin does to tell Arthur for, like, encouragement, I guess, is that you have to rely on the strength of your people. And then Merlin just fucking sits back and watches.
I'm like, nah, bitch, I'm relying on your magic.
It was your magic that made me king in the first place because I could pull Excalibur from the stone.
Right? And I'm sure you enchanted this whole fucking castle to be protected. So
clearly not.
What are you doing? Also, the battle scene was a little weak. I won't lie. It's like no one knew how to write or draw the battles. And so they were just like, we're going to make it real quick and kill off Egbert in the best way we can.
Kill off Egbert. Wait, who's Egbert? Are you talking about Ruber?
There you go, Ruber.
Oh my God.
I forgot his name completely after that.
It literally just sounded like you combined Rothbart with the chicken that we've been arguing about, this whole we've been hating on this whole time. And I'm just like, who the fuck is Egbert? Oh my God.
It's Rhubarb at this point.
Egbert Rhubarb. That sounds like the name of a really weird egg pie. Like an egg rhubarb.
I mean, have you looked at Robert, whatever his name is. Again, I still don't know.
I mean, he's definitely on like cocaine or something because he twitches all the fucking time.
I want to understand his, like, they killed him. Like, I was not expecting him to die the way he did. Like, his whole body was completely disintegrated.
So just so everybody knows how Ruber dies. So he uses the magic potion that he has to literally fuse Excalibur to his arm so that he can permanently hold it forever and wield its magic power. So then what happens is that Kaylee and Garrett trick him into shoving the sword back into the stone where it used to be. And so then the magic of everything that Ruber had gets reversed. So Bladebeak goes back to being a fucking chicken. And all of the henchmen go back to normal. And then Ruber just disintegrates into fucking nothing. You see no trace of him ever again.
And I was just like, this is, for a kid's movie, this is pretty, that's a pretty interesting way to make someone die.
I mean, it's not as,
I was like,
I mean, listen, it's not as morbid as how they decide to kill Clayton and Tarzan.
I mean, true.
Like, there are worse ways, but yeah, this is the magical way of seeing someone die. But yeah, you literally see, like, him turning black and him, like, puffing out of existence.
Yeah, this movie from after the intro to the finish was very weird, interesting, and
rushed.
I personally wouldn't recommend it for anyone to watch, but if you're curious, do you.
Yeah, if you're curious about it, do you. I mean, I remember me and my brothers being obsessed with this movie when we were younger, but I think really what made us more obsessed about this movie when we were little is the animation and the world of the Forbidden Forest. I mean, the Forbidden Forest is pretty cool. How, like, you know, everything in it is enchanted, and, like, you know, you have to, like, and, like, Garrett, even though he's blind, he knows how to navigate the forest with the help of Aiden, the silver-winged falcon. So I think that element is probably what made this movie my favorite, because as a child, I was pretty simplistic, and I liked pretty things, so the movie is pretty. It's just the storyline is very, very simple and very, very rushed. So, but thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of Two Rambling Theater Gays. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and will join us next time as we discuss the Newsies.
And hey, if you want to watch these shows or listen to the soundtracks yourself, you can usually find these shows on YouTube, Spotify, Hulu, Amazon Prime, iTunes, basically anywhere where you can pay a small rent fee for the movies or listen to the soundtracks for free. Until next time.
Bye-bye.